Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 33, Randy Reynolds. Randy is a well-educated, well-schooled, well-experienced seller who has spent quite a bit of time being the dean of a community college small business center. And he brings that approach to selling. And I just think there's just so much information that he shares. And it's just so neat to see someone taking that approach to this business. It's long-awaited, well-needed, and I think we can all learn from it. So let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight, one of the bearded boys, the men with beards, the four Norsemen? You know, not horsemen, maybe Norsemen? I don't know. That's a Nordic kind of thing, a beard. I don't know. Randy Reynolds. Welcome, Randy.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I tease you guys because you're one of the owners of the list, and there's a prerequisite to be an owner of the list other than Andy, who's bald on the top. You have to have a beard, and he tries to get a beard, but it's just not happening. It's not doing well.
No, it isn't, but I didn't always have a beard.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't grow it for the list. I think it was just kind of coincidental, and now it's sort of like our mascot or something.
We used to get hockey playoffs. Everybody had to grow, you know, kind of some facial hair and then take it off after, you know, the playoffs were over. That was kind of a thing we did. So Randy, you've been selling about 4 years. This is your fourth Q4 coming up, right?
Right.
But, I mean, A, you're a huge scale. So, I mean, you've got an enormous business that you've built up. Let's go back, way back. What did Randy start doing?
Well, when I started getting into this, it really wasn't for me. My wife had been homeschooling our kids. Our last one was off and finishing up college, and she was kind of looking around saying, well, what should I do now? And I was running a small business center at the community college, and I had a guy that used to come in and do eBay seminars all the time. So I said, hey, eBay would probably be a good thing for you. And you know, we started researching it and getting her started in it. Well, as I was doing the research for that, I started finding information about FBA. Mm-hmm. And so while she was doing the eBay, I started getting more interested in the FBA, and I decided to give it a try on a part-time thing, you know, that we were both doing, and it worked out really well.
And so were you teaching at the college, or were you – they had was it a small business incubator kind of thing, or was it to get students to start businesses?
Well, it's kind of all of the above. In North Carolina, the community college system has small business centers at each community college to help people in the community to start businesses. So there's counseling, there's seminars that are done for free, and just information libraries and things to help people get going. I actually, in my last position, was the dean of corporate and continuing education. It was one of those really long titles with short money. And I was over the small business center at that point.
So do you have a business degree? Is that what your degree is in business?
My master's is in business.
Okay. So you've got a great background for this. Were you just a teacher prior to that? Has that always been your career?
No. I mean, I was in college. I was a biology major. I got out. I worked as a chemist. Had enough of that for a while and went into the Navy, flew backseat in F-14s for a while, and then got out of the Navy. My father died, so I went into the family business for 10 years, owning dry cleaners and laundromats. Got tired of the weather in the north. And I had been teaching as an adjunct at the community college, some small business courses, and decided to move south when we were able to get the job at the small business center at their local community college. So that kind of brought me down here.
It's just a great background. I mean, you're set up perfectly to be able to transition into entrepreneurship, right? I mean, you have all the technical skills. Whether you have the entrepreneurial vein is a different issue, right?
Right.
Do you think you do have that?
Yes. I come from kind of an entrepreneurial family. I don't remember my parents really ever working for anyone. I heard my father did. And he was probably like the first. Well, if you asked him what he did, he said he was a hustler. And he would do old time arbitrage. He would go down to New York City and buy wigs and hats, put them in his car, and then go around the different neighborhoods and sell them out of there. Eventually, he found that, well, he could pick up dry cleaning while he was out there, and he would do that. And then a local cleaner's went out, and so he decided to open his own. So that's kind of what I've grown up with.
And so you, that was the way dinner, you know, was discussed over dinner. Was it always business around the house, that kind of thing?
It wasn't really so much discussed, but you saw it. Okay. One of my first business ventures was I would walk to school and stop at the penny store, a penny candy store, buy candy, take it into school and mark it up and sell it.
So you became your father's hustler, right?
As yeah.
You took that term literally. Did you work in the dry cleaning business too when you were there?
Yeah. Okay. When I was growing up, I worked in it, and I also learned that I needed to do something else if I wanted to make money.
Okay. So you were like a Gary Vee working for pennies, hardly getting paid anything because that was just contributing back to the family, right?
Right. When I asked my father one time about getting paid, he said, "You eat, don't you?"
Yeah. That's funny. I think some of the Dave Ramsey quotes, I can kill you and get more, you know, I can make more of you, you know.
Yep.
That's funny. So you really have seen the success. Now, was the businesses that he had were successful?
Yep. Sometimes they were successful. Sometimes they weren't. I mean, they were always
good.
Up
so that's
down.
What I was hoping. You got to see the other side of it. Yeah. What can you draw back? Do you find yourself drawing back to the times when it wasn't successful? Is there anything that you remember that you're like, oh, no, not doing that. Dad did that and that didn't pan out well.
Well, one of the things that Dad did that I found out that I did anyway and didn't like was having employees. Lots of them.
Okay.
So that's really one of the things that I've brought into this business. It kind of comes from watching it growing up and then being in the dry cleaning business myself for 10 years. I'm building this so that I don't have to have a lot of employees.
I think that you're smart, and I think there's a little naivete for some people because, you know, while things are good and employees are good, you know, that's great. But when they go bad, they can go really bad, and that's what's very dangerous. And we're going to talk about you outsourcing because you're a big proponent of outsourcing. You offer an outsource service with the list, right? Because
right.
You're an owner of the list, and you offer that service just for somebody else. So I think that I think that you brought in a strength because you've seen the other side of it. You're not having to figure it out for yourself. You've seen it and say, nah, that's just not a good thing. When you were at the community college, how did you handle steering people coming in with all these dreams and saying, hey, I'm going to have, you know, a giant business. I'm going to have 10,000 employees. I mean, did you have to coach that? How did you handle that?
Well, usually I'd like to try to give them questions to get them to see something for themselves and have them research stuff. Probably the number one business that people wanted to start when I was in the small business center was a restaurant. And, you know, they had no concept of the amount of work and everything that goes into running a restaurant. So if this was something they were persisting in, I would try to get them hooked up to find a place where they could go and maybe spend some time and learn, is this really what they want to do?
That's smart. That's really smart. So you've taken that knowledge now and brought it into this business. So were you were part-time doing this up until 4 years ago? You didn't just turn off the switch at the community college and say, okay, I'm ready to go, right?
No, I've been full-time here for about a year and a half now.
Okay, so then you did this for 2.5 years in addition to your full-time job.
Yes.
That's a big point of discussion. I'm still full-time in my job, and I have a few more years till I retire, and I still enjoy it. So it takes something special to do both, I think, because it's hard to focus, but you have to know your strengths and your weaknesses. And clearly, you know your strengths and you know your weaknesses. What would you say is one of your bigger weaknesses?
Sometimes losing focus because there are just so many shiny objects out there. And the more you do this, the more opportunity there is. And sometimes it's hard to distill down the one that should be pursued at the time.
Well, you're making a big change in your business, and I want to talk about that because I just think I just interviewed Brandon Gompers, and he went through the same thing, and he took a few months off to re-change his business, and Dwayne Malik, I spoke with him, and his business, the same model. So I'm very interested in – I noticed that there's a pattern amongst the successful sellers. So let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about how you've been able to pivot, and it doesn't seem like you've lost any ground, but I think you've built a foundation for that. So let's take a quick break. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit selleressentials.com. For more information, that's SellerEssentials.com. All right, before we jump back in, I told you this is one of the smart people who really has figured out a lot of this business. And what he's going to walk us through now is how he's been able to pivot his business. And I think a lot of people, well, a lot of the smart sellers, the successful sellers, have been pivoting lately. And I think it's because you start to figure things out and you say, hey, yeah, I could do this and it works, or I could do this and it really works. And so, you know, you're giving up something that works for something that works so much better. I think that's such a great lesson. I think it's something we can all take in. Also pay attention to how Randy talks about repricing. I think he understands it better than almost everyone else I've ever talked with. And I think there's a lot of information worth learning there. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Randy Reynolds. And Randy is a very, very, very successful, I'll call him a mega seller. Tough, I'm going to call you that.
I don't think I'm a mega, at least in Amazon's eyes, I'm surely not.
No. But in our world, you are. And you're so quiet about it and so humble. And that's definitely one of your attributes that it is attractive because a 5-minute conversation with you and you're like, all right, this dude's really smart. He knows what he's doing. I got to listen more. And what leads us to this interview was you and I were recently at Jim Cockrum's CES conference and we were at a party and there was a bathtub full of beer. And there were a lot of women with beards on. I will remember. I think your wife even had a beard on. I'm just going to remember seeing a picture there. I think she had a beard.
Yes, I was kissed by a bearded woman.
Yes, that was a different night. We won't go into that part of the party, but it was a good party, by the way. But we got into discussion, and one of the things we talked about was spending money and investments and that kind of discussion. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're so right on with what you're saying. So you've taken your business, which was – you had a great year last year by any stretch of the – probably better than you thought you would have done, right?
Oh, yes. Much better than I thought I'd do.
And on top of that, you still have the list, which you're a major contributor to. But this year, you switched categories, and you tell me now that shoes has become your number one category.
Yes.
That's not an easy transition to make. I mean, it's a gated category. There are bigger returns or return of value, but as you and I discussed offline before then, it takes a while to get some momentum going. You've been able to get it going pretty quickly. Walk us through that.
Well, I had thought about starting shoes probably late last year and use a service to get ungated because – and I guess I'll go back to what you're saying about investment. To me, my time is my most valuable asset. So learning how to do it was just not worth my time. Hmm. So I paid to get that done, started kind of playing with shoes going through Q4, but wasn't really serious about it. We also, since starting every year in Q1, I kind of take that as a time to step back. We actually go away and do a short retreat and kind of look at where we're at and pick a new category that we're going to go forward in. Last year, that was grocery. And we went and all out trying grocery, but it found out it was just not a category for us. This past year, the category was shoes, so we jumped in you know, fully into that. And like we've discussed before, it takes a little time to be able to get your inventory loaded into shoes, but it's been a really great change. The important part about that for me was that it was able to raise my average selling price. So we're not having to handle as much stuff to make as much money, or to actually right. make more money, which was very attractive, because last Q4 was pretty brutal in the toy category, fighting it out for margins with tons of sellers. The gated categories allows me to sell with less competition, better margins, and it'll probably change over time, but I'll just look to the next thing that I need to move to.
I think you describe what a lot of people have done. So they went into grocery, realized that it's a lot of work. Everything's bagged. Everything's labeled, double labeled, mm-hmm. sometimes triple labeled. And now it's a bundle. I mean, yeah. you know, you got a gallon of this, and now it's a bundle of 12. And I'm thinking, who's going to buy 12 gallons of blah, right?
right?
But everything's become that way. And very quickly, you know, and now you're starting to see, you know, I think we're seeing a lot of people saying, hey, this isn't for me. And I went right down the same path with you. But shoes, I think, is a great example. As you said, though, it does take a long lead time to get enough inventory to start getting a turn. And it takes a lot of cash. I mean,
yep.
you're dropping a lot of money, because you're paying, you know, $30, $40, $50 sometimes for a pair of shoes. The return is great, but it's a lot of money.
Yep.
You know, to get, you know, 50 pairs, you're dropping several thousand dollars.
Yeah, we have shoes that are up in the $150 range to buy.
You're buying.
That I'm buying.
Wow. And so, you know, for you to drop a few thousand dollars, it's 10 minutes of work, right?
Yeah.
Now, one of the things we discussed offline, too, was that you're doing most of your shoe finds yourself online. You're using online arbitrage. So you have a couple places that you just know, or categories of shoes that you know. I mean, how long did it take you to get comfortable to where you're starting to see some pretty good success?
I'm seeing success, but I'm still making mistakes. You know, we're less than a year into this, so I'm still learning. But, you know, working through there and buying stuff and trying to follow and see which sizes sell, colors sell, has been a real learning experience for me, because especially women's shoes, I had no clue. So I pretty much had stayed away from them in the beginning and was staying with things that were more standard, like athletic shoes, men's dress shoes, things that I could understand. Over time, I started learning a little more about pumps and flats and the difference in colors, what women are more interested in, and seasonality of shoes.
It's better that than bras, because that's
I do a lot of bras, too.
You know a lot about that. That's great.
I know more about bras than I want to.
So you really have taken and spent your time, though. You know, as I mentioned, I had interviewed Brandon Gompers, and he's heavy into shoes, and he's building out his own Shopify store. And one of the things he talked about was spending a lot of time in researching. He pulled back his sales, and he said, Steve, my sales have gone down, but it's been intentional because I wanted to learn. Now, you have your wife and your two daughters working in the business with you. So one a little more seasonal than the other. But so you have somebody else to rely on, to fall back on, right? And plus you're using a prep company.
Yes.
So that, I think we're back to that time discussion, right? Because that was the discussion that we had at that party, was you see an investment into a service or equipment not as an expense, right? That was the way our discussion went. So walk us through where your philosophy is on that.
Well, I look at any service or an employee or something else, process that I'm going to do, to see, will it save me time and will it save me money? And if something saves me time, then it, in essence, is saving me money. I had probably one of the biggest investments I made was going into a repricer. When I first started this business, I was repricing manually. And then one day on January 1st, I realized I had not repriced since Black Friday because I didn't have time to do that. And I realized that I needed, even though there is a cost in the repricer, there's a bigger cost in not repricing. So I spent the money and I have a repricer. For me to reprice by hand, that last time took me 10 hours with my inventory. I will never do that again.
What would you say it takes you now? Well, now it's just an automatic function. It's a continuous, right?
Well, it's continuous. Once you get it in there, I've put processes in place so that everything gets set up until right to the point where I have to put the floor and ceiling is done for me. And this evening, I'm actually getting on to create a video for my oldest daughter, teaching her how I set my floors and ceilings. And that's a really tough thing for me to let go of. But I found that I have to let go of things in this business if I want to grow.
So you're deriving a floor, right, which is the bottom that you want this item to sell. You know, let's use some logic, right? So let's say the shoes cost you $30. And when they sell at $30, Amazon's going to take a third. Let's just make it and say, oh, it's going to cost you $40 when they sell. If it sells at $40, it's going to cost you blah, 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 right? And all the way through. So you're working your way backwards to say, here's the acceptable amount of money. Are you prepared to lose money on any shoes in your floor, or are you staying above your optimal loss point?
Well, I use SpeedVisor, so I don't go into it immediately being ready to lose. Okay. When I set up my floor and ceiling, I'm able to see at the floor what my return will be.
Okay.
Because it imports all of that information.
So are you going down to a 1%, 2%?
No, I'm going to where I think will be reasonable for now. And then once every several months, I will have them run a report for me to see which items are like not competitive, I think is what they call the report.
Have you tried any other pricing services out there?
I have probably had the trial for almost every one of them, but my mind doesn't work really well with these rules. Mm-hmm. And a cheaper repricer that I won't use is not saving me money.
No, I agree with you. And so why did you land on FeedVisor? What was it that made that service different than the other? And we don't have to badmouth anybody else, but what was it that made that one shine for you?
Simplicity.
Mm.
It imports all the stuff from Amazon. We have to put a cost in, and I have that done for me. Then I just look down in the little box for the floor and ceiling, and I can see whatever I put in the floor will tell me what my return will be and what the percentage will be. I don't have to think about rules. I don't have to think about anything else. And for me, it's worth the money, and it's very expensive, but it's cheaper than not doing it.
So you, I mean, yeah, it's really expensive. Yeah. I mean, it's thousands of dollars a month.
It's 1%. So if it's in December, it's going to be a lot of money.
Now, yeah, it's going to be.
Now, on the positive side, they only charge you for what runs through the repricer.
And so you say categories run through the repricer. Do you get that specific or
no?
Walk us a little bit of logic if you can.
Well, what happens is through our procedures, I'm not the one who sets the initial prices on our inventory. It's one of my two daughters does that when they're doing the listing. And they tend to price on the higher end. So by the time I get around to going into FeedVisor to set the floor and ceiling, a lot of times things have sold. So I don't have to pay the 1% on that.
And it's a fee plus the 1%, right? Is that the way it is?
It isn't it's now.
Well,
it isn't on the plan I have, but I've been with them for a while. I saw something about their changing things around, and I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, I'm looking at their site now. It says a business booster, $2.99 plus 1% of sales of items repriced with us is the lower version. Or you can go to FeedVisor Pro, which is $1,000 plus 0.05%. Is that a month or is that a year?
That's a month.
That's a month. So it's $299 a month minimum plan plus. But you're a mega seller. So, I mean, when you think about what that is, I understand. But have you thought about how much an employee would cost to do that for you? Because everything about you is your time, right? Yeah. So if you hired somebody to do as well as they did, would you spend more than the 1%?
I would have to, because you can't have an employee watching it and reacting that quickly.
Well, you'd have to pay them a lot of overtime.
It would be a lot
right?
of overtime.
Once they hit that 40 hours.
Yeah, or a bunch of employees. And you know, it's possible that there will be another repricer that we will switch to that's cheaper if I can find a way to do it. I had talked to the folks at AppEagle, and there's only one feature about theirs that they hadn't put in yet that's keeping me from going to them, because they do have an algorithmic repricer now.
Okay.
But it doesn't import the Amazon fees. So if I have to sit there and calculate them myself, or risk making a mistake kind of looking at it, then it's not worth my using.
So would you say, now I just want to think about your business model. You're doing a huge business. You're doing most of your sourcing online. Now you're doing a lot of the sourcing yourself.
Yes.
You're sending that inventory generally to Prime Zero Prep, right?
I send, right now, about half is going to Prime Zero Prep. As we move more into Q4, a larger percentage will go there.
Okay, so you've outsourced that. So right now your time is spent on the buying. Does your wife or your daughters, do they help with the buying too, the online buying?
No. I'm the only online buyer. And next year, that is one of my goals, is to figure out how to offload that too.
Yeah, to train, because that's an interesting issue for you, right?
Yes.
But you're not having trouble finding inventory, are you?
No.
Okay, so there's plenty of inventory this right now, so that's a good thing. So your most of your work is going out there, or your daughter is doing the prepping on that, so you're really not involved in that. So that piece is now outsourced for you. You then spend a lot of time with FeedVisor. How much time does it take for you to set the floor and the ceiling on these?
I don't spend a lot of time with FeedVisor. It's just a matter of sitting down to do it. If it's a particular style of shoe, I can probably, once I determine where I want my bracket to be, go through and do 10 of them in a minute.
So, I mean, in a week, what percentage of your time would be spent? I mean, an hour a week?
I'm probably, because we run so many new SKUs with the arbitrage, that it would be about 2.5 to 3 hours a week.
Okay. And so was it a lot of work to set up initially to bring all your products up?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. They all came in, but then it was having to get the cost data.
Okay. Okay. Now, are you using a service to list inventory tracking kind of service or something?
I use ScanPower. Been using that pretty much since the beginning.
And so you're putting in your costs and all that kind of jazz?
No, I'm not doing it in there. We do it in a different spreadsheet.
Okay, so you're doing it separately. Okay. I use ScanPower too, and I do put all our costs in. So it's interesting. So you've really invested a lot of time in FeedVisor, but you're seeing the fruits of your labor now.
Yes.
Would you say that has been the biggest reason for your success in growth? I guess, you know, maybe you kind of alluded to this in the beginning, but to be able to do so well in shoes so quickly, other than having a lot of money to buy a lot of stuff, would this be the biggest jump?
No, I think FeedVisor helps it because it helps keep everything moving. But a lot of it is just being out there and getting a wide inventory.
Hmm. Well, it is. You do really, because you don't need to go deep. You know, it's only a few pair of most sizes, right?
Yes.
Have any idea how many SKUs you have?
Of shoes?
Yeah.
No, but I would probably, I guess, maybe 800 or more. Okay. I don't know, just thinking of how many shoes we sell.
And are you able to restock a lot of them? Are you buying the same ones as if you can?
Very rarely can I do that because most of what I'm getting is being closed out or cleared. Shoes are very seasonal. So unless you're in certain athletic shoes, they're not all that easily replenishable.
How many do you buy normally when you do buy?
Of a size, a variation?
Yeah, I mean, I know it's kind of a, you know, I always say that, you know, women's shoes are 8s, 9s, and 10s, and men's are 9s through 12s, right? So those are the pretty common sizes, right? And then you have the wide and then, you know, the mediums and that kind of thing. How many, you know, in those standard sizes, I guess, would be the ones that I would be thinking of. Are you buying, you know, 5-pair, 10-pair? And I know it depends on the deal. I understand that.
Usually I'm looking and buying 2 to 3 per variation. So you know, like three black size nines, three
okay.
like that, because it adds up pretty quickly.
Are you doing half sizes a lot?
Yeah, I'll do half sizes. I have to evaluate the SKU to decide if I want to go for the outlier sizes or the cluster in the center.
Okay.
And, okay. you know, because some shoes, there's so much competition in the common sizes that you can do better with a couple of, you know, the size 14 men's shoes.
So when you're looking at, you know, whether a shoe, are you using, you know, fits correctly, all the terms that are in Amazon to help you make decisions?
Probably should be, but I don't.
Okay. So a lot of it is just, you know, over time you've now, as you said, though, you've made some mistakes, but not very many fatal mistakes, it doesn't sound like. So you've really just gotten a feel for this.
Yeah, it's just getting a feel for it. And that's the hard part about teaching someone else to do it.
Yeah, yeah. It's not it's intuitive to you now, but you put a lot of data in to get it to be intuitive, where you can just like, oh, yeah, I can just refer back to it. It's hard to get them to understand all that stuff that those decisions are built on, right? Because there's been a lot of pain and sweat to be able to build that decision in. Interesting. I'll be interested to see how she does next year. That'll be an interesting discussion. Next year I'll have you back and we can talk about how well she did or didn't.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be interesting. So let's get back to the time investment. So you've outsourced your your prepping either to your daughter or to Prep Zero. You offer a service that is an outsourced kind of service. Are there any other services? Well, ScanPower is an outsourced service. That's an investment too. Any other large investments that you have in your business that you think that people should be just saying, my God, you just have to have it. Don't even think of it as an expense.
Well, I wouldn't have thought of this until recently, but really something like ScanPower and just going to a label printer. There are a lot of people that are printing the 30-sheet label still. And if you think about, even if you lose 10 seconds per item and you have 100 items, that's a lot of time.
Oh, it's terrible. When I started, I did 30 up. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And then they get mixed up, and then you can't find them, and then they only so much information prints out. Oh, it's very difficult.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And, you know, for somebody starting out, just thinking of those little time-saving things that you can do, because most of where you're going to make the money is being outsourcing, not sticking labels on stuff.
Now, do you believe your money is made at the buy or at the sell?
I guess I would have to say at the buy, but yeah, I would say that you're buying the right thing.
Well, I Matt Kelly used a great example one time, and I thought, boy, that's just such a great plain way to say it. He's like, I make sure that I buy it at such the right price that no matter what, when the price falls, and it will fall, even when it falls, I still break even after fees.
Yeah.
If you can assure, I mean, because think about this, you can put your money in the bank and maybe you'll get 1%, right?
Right.
Okay, great. You put your money in the stock market, it can grow, but it could not grow, right?
Right.
If you bought inventory that will sell, and when it sells, worst case scenario is it broke even, it only has upside,
yeah.
Really. There's no downside, right? So there's really not many other things that you could do other than a bank, and the best you're going to get is 1%. There's really not many other things you can invest in. Now, that's qualifying it to say, hey, you're buying something that will sell, that it's the right, you know, right piece and it's not going to go out of date or that kind of thing. But
yeah.
I just thought that was such a great way to say it. It was just so easy to see when you hear it that way. It's so plain.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at my inventory more as a portfolio. I've gotten where I don't get married to a particular piece. So on some things I'm not going to do as well, but on other things I'll probably do better than I expected.
I love that. Look at your inventory as a portfolio. Oh, man, that's deep, buddy. That's really deep. That's really well said. So you can, as something's going up, Halloween right now, your Easter stuff isn't doing so well. Bad example, but, you know.
Yeah, hopefully I don't have any more.
Well, but I think one of the cool things about shoes, while it's cold in Florida right now, it's not going to be in about 3 weeks or 4 weeks. You know, it's going to be back to flip-flop weather. And so while flip-flops in the Northeast really aren't going to work unless you're in the gym, they're not going to be used very much up here. But down south, they're still going to be in season, right?
Right.
So do you know where do you ever wonder where a lot of your sales? You sell a lot of expensive shoes. Do you sell a lot of seasonal shoes? Does it seem to be, or are they just expensive women's shoes?
I sell pretty much any kind. I'm not buying as much of the summer things that I know are specifically summer right now. And I'm going a little more into the darker colors and the winter colors and things that look like they can be more transitional.
Yeah, boots. I notice I'm actually selling more boots right now. I notice it, and you know, common sense would tell you why. It's coming, right? And you can see it.
People are buying expensive winter coats, and I'm wondering, where are they living?
Man, oh man. I just love the story how you take a very, very, very successful business and say, I'm going to try something else. You're going to pivot. I interviewed Dan Miller the other day, and Dan talked about he has to get rid of, it's a rule in his life, the bottom 15% of what he's doing. And he said, Steve, those 15% are still producing for me, but no matter what, I'm getting rid of it because I know I'm going to replace it with another 15% that could be the best potential thing I've ever brought into my life and my world and my business. And I thought, man, that's a smart way. It's nervy, though. I mean, it takes some real strength and confidence in yourself to be able to do that.
But you have to let go of something because you can't do everything.
Yeah, I think it's great. Anything that you're looking to outsource that would be a help to you right now that you say, man, I wish somebody would offer this service or something. This is a pain point for me.
Well, right now, the two things I had mentioned were the pricing and the buying.
So you're, going to work towards them.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be services for that, but that's what I'm working toward.
I think it's smart. Your biggest strength as an entrepreneur seems to be, well, I mean, it seems to me is you got a wide-reaching breadth of business experience. Did you pick up a lot of that in the community college by seeing so many, by being exposed to so many different businesses?
I probably got some from that, and you know, I've been involved with the economic development community around here, so I've gotten to see everything from small businesses to major companies come in and how they operate.
And that's good and bad, right?
Yep.
So you get to see the benefits, and then you also get to see the downside. Is that one of the reasons, too, that you say, I don't want to become this mega conglomerate and have a big warehouse with 50 employees and all the rest of the grief that comes along with it?
Well, I think mostly it's my age that I want to, like, enjoy life. And I'm trying to build a business that I can have freedom from. I don't want something that I'm going to be a slave to for another 20 years that I can have it really huge and sell it, because in 20 years I'll be in my 70s.
So let's talk about that for a second. So you have a plan, kind of started about 4 years ago. You're 4 years into your plan, where you're a year and a half into full time in the plan. Where's the plan? How long is the plan?
The plan goes on to the point where I can step away and have a business that'll run without me.
So looking at where you're at, how far out is that, do you think, realistically?
Realistically? I mean, I wish it was 6 months away, but I don't think so. I think I'm probably going to be at least a year away from that.
But you can see a year from now, you could really see that far out and see that you can advance that much further along and be ready in a year. That's a big deal. That's a really bold statement, Randy. I mean, it really is.
Well, a lot of it is I spend a lot of my time looking at things, trying to figure out how I can make it into a system that can be replicated by someone else.
Do you document your processes? It's a good question. You already said that you were going to do a video for your daughter.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot better at documenting my processes.
You know, one of the best ideas I heard from somebody is to create a private Facebook group for your staff, and in your case it would be your family or whatever, where you can put all your training videos and all your documents and things. So we use Google Drive and stuff like that. But I thought, boy, that's just so smart, because you could put videos out there. You could put all those things and keep it together. Do you have a process for that yet?
I have everything that's saved on Google Drive.
Okay. And you just share it that way.
Yeah.
Wow. How often are you talking with your daughters about the business and, you know, where we're going and what we're doing and that kind of thing?
Not very often. They know what they need to do. And my oldest, we've talked a little more about different things that she can get into and be able to do. But beyond that, we really haven't looked too far into the future.
Okay. Do you see, so your future is a year away. What about their future? Do you think they see a future in this as a business for themselves?
Well, my youngest is doing this kind of as her placeholder out of college. She likes this because she doesn't have to be around people.
Right. No, I get it.
She kind of likes this. My oldest, because she's my entrepreneurial child, and she's got her own little businesses going, and this is a way for her to make money, and she is very good at what she does. She was the first one I taught how to actually source, and does it very well, and she can come back with a bunch of bras where I will be kind of dancing around the side of the department with women giving me nasty looks.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But and so did she have the eye almost immediately, do you think?
I think so. This is my child that when we moved to North Carolina, it was right at the height of the Beanie Baby boom. And eBay was pretty in the early days. She would buy or have me buy through the account Beanie Babies on eBay. And she'd have me drive her around to buy Beanie Babies everywhere. And we lived on a kind of major road. And she would set up a stand out front and sell Beanie Babies. And
no
she'd
kidding.
Sometimes make, I think the most she made one day was like $500.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. That's so cool. You know, that's a confidence. When somebody's that confident to be able to deal with the public, I mean, let's face it, that's not easy to do. And that's amazing. Yeah, she's going to go far. That's great. That's great. What's the best advice you ever gotten from anybody?
Probably the best business advice I ever got was from when I first got to the community college back in 98. One of the older gentleman on our board was an insurance. He had this big insurance agency, and what he had told me was how he got started was he worked night and day, and he had his job, and he did not quit his day job until it was costing him too much money to keep it.
That's great advice.
And that's what I thought about while I was building this business was, if I could keep the day job and build the business, I didn't have to take money out of the business. And this business will grow far faster if I left the money in.
So you did that for 2.5 years. That's no small feat. That takes a lot of discipline. 2.5 years.
Yeah, so, you know, when I quit my job, I was able to have things paid off. I had inventory. I had money in the business. And I was confident that it would be able to carry me through. But if I had quit when I wanted to, I couldn't be to the size that I am now because I wouldn't have had the capital to do it.
So his advice is what kept you going?
Yeah.
Did you just keep going back to that in your mind saying, hey, you know what? Let's get here. We're not into that play. That's great advice. And that is something that all of us, especially those that, you know, it is hard. It's that shiny object because you're in here and you're having fun and you're like, hey, that, you know, you have a lot of freedom going out and buying things and selling them. And you're having some success and you're seeing a lot of other people with a lot of success and you're saying, I can do that. I can do that. They don't understand the pain it took to get that pipeline full. It does take a lot of money, sweat, and toil to figure out products, to figure out, because you got to buy enough of them, and you have to fill that pipeline. You have to have a very large pipeline filled to be able to do that. So that really is good advice. So let's talk about The List. Okay, so The List is a group. It's called The List, and there's a Facebook group, and it's a paid group, and it's a service that you guys offer. There's four of you that offer it, and it's how many items a day?
At least 10.
At least 10 a day, but it's 10 items that you or David or Chris or Curtis personally find.
Yeah, we're all sourcing anyway. And I mean, that's what I do most of the time is sit and look for stuff to buy. So we are actually on the list. And I think what may set it apart from others is these are the items that we're buying. It's not something that looks like a good deal or that somebody might buy, or one time I had the question, do you buy things like this? I said, no, these are the things that we're buying.
I think that's a big difference because, you know, a lot of people use VAs, and there's nothing wrong with it. I use a VA, so, I mean, he's a great guy, and he helps me enormously. But there is a distance in the communication, the translation, and in my case with him, it's age. He's a lot younger than I am. And so we look at things differently. So you're saying, hey, this is what I'm buying, this shoe or whatever, you know, a particular thing, and I suggest you buy it also. And so you're doing that, and you've been doing that. That list has been around now longer than a year?
No, we started last January. We started in January, okay. So this will be
okay, so it's coming up on a year.
This is our first Q4, and it'll be an exciting one.
Yeah, you really set up for success because, A, I'm sure the communication, all the learning curves, all the bumps are all now long gone because you're 9 months into it. So are there openings on the list or is there a waiting list? Or
I think from Curtis that there is a waiting list now.
And what's the URL for the website?
Let me go look at that.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure that people can find it. And I'll have a link to it on the podcast. But again, if you're thinking about, you know, and it's not cheap. I mean, they aren't going to make any qualms about it. It's expensive, but you're getting quality items. Again, you're paying for time because, you know, the longer you're in this business, you'll find the money. Time is your biggest enemy, in essence, and anywhere you can save time. So if you can get a good quality group of things to buy, and you know that they're good items because you guys are buying them yourself. Again, you're not using other services to get these. You're doing it yourself. I think that's a big difference. So were you able to find that?
Oh, I thought you were going to look.
Okay.
That's okay.
I can look for it. That's it. We can do that. Usually we work on the fly. This is a no-stress interview. Remember that. That's my style. No stress. So on Facebook, right, it is the list, and I'm going to have to go find it. Online Seller Academy, right?
Right. That's probably the easiest way.
I think that is the easiest way because you'll get notifications of the service in Online Seller Academy. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's our group. That's our free group.
Okay.
And
so
anyone's
really
welcome
weird.
To join that.
Yeah, there's a lot of information. Online Sellers Academy, that's what you want to search for. And there's a lot of information in there. You have videos. You have question and answers. But you can also find out about the list. And all the guys are in there, so that's the best place. Oh, there's a picture of the pool of beer.
Yes.
On the that's the photo. And the bearded man. Oh, there I am. There's your wife with a beard. I see her. That's great. So it is it's just a good group and there's a lot of good information in here, a lot of help, and you can ask questions and get good answers. And I just encourage everyone. It's free, Online Seller Academy. There you can find out about the list, which is a paid service that you guys offer. But again, you know, if you're looking to find quality items to buy, it's a good service to buy. I mean, it really is. So I will give you guys credit for that because I really think you guys are doing a great job with it. Okay, so we're getting down to the end. But I always like to ask people, especially somebody, you know, you're a learned individual. And so it takes to stay learned, you're probably spending some time reading or listening to things. Give any tips or books or podcasts or things that you would suggest that our listeners can get some things from?
Well, I used to listen to the old FBA radio, and that's really what I was brought up on in this business. Now I mostly listen to history books while I'm out driving. I'm on Facebook constantly, and that's just the nature of running the list and sourcing and being in front of a computer all day. So most of my information now is coming through following, you know, if somebody has a blog post. There's nothing really specific that I'm on right now.
Okay. But you're really following information in the Facebook groups. It's a great place to get a lot of information because there is a myriad. I mean, there's just so much out there. So that's still good.
Some,
you know, and I think
some good, some bad, but
take the good and the bad. But the history books can clear your head, too. And I think I interviewed Darla Flack, and she said the same thing. She said, I kind of taken a break from listening to podcasts and things. It was drowning out. It was consuming my life, and I have a life, and I don't want it to be only this. I don't want this to become too large a piece of it. So I think that's not a bad advice. Okay, so you know the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward, right? And so we want to take somebody who's hit that $10,000 or $20,000 a month level and they can't get past it. They're struggling and they're looking for a tip or a trick that you can offer that you can help them move forward that they can put in place tomorrow, not tonight, but maybe tomorrow in their business to move them forward.
Well, what I would say, let me back up, is there was a time that I felt I had to do everything, and that will hold back your growth. So what I would say is to look at the business and find something that you can get somebody else to do. It might be prepping. It might be packing, shipping, sourcing. There's something in that business that can be handed over to another person. And when you hand that over, that's going to free up your time to do the things that are more profitable. So I think that would probably be the best advice I can give, is just to look. And I think we all have some process. Some of them, you know, some of us are farther along in handing things off, but we all have some process that we can get someone else to do. And a lot of times, you know, somebody can do it better than us.
Well, I think it's even your comment about repricing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even an item that can be outsourced if you're doing it yourself. So that is a great piece of advice. So, man, I just appreciate you taking the time. Best place to get you would be Online Seller Academy.
That's it.
Okay. So I'll have links to all that. I really appreciate you taking the time. I really appreciate you taking the time to walk us through the business transition you're going through. I think it's impressive. I think it's smart. I think there's a lot of lesson. And I'll be honest with you, it's a common trait among the successful sellers that I've been interviewing that they've been able to pivot and adjust as they go forward. So, man, have a great night, and I just appreciate you taking the time again.
Okay. Well, thank you. Enjoyed it.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.